Hey Arrivals listeners, this is Jonathan Hirsch, the host of the show. We have a special announcement at the end of this episode, so I'm asking you to stay tuned. This is Arrivals, stories of migration, transformation, and change. The program that explores what we do when what we've done is a thing of the past.
My name is Michal, and I was raised in suburban New York to a middle-class Jewish family, liberal, supportive, in some ways sort of culturally conservative. I was the kid who didn't know about the birds and the bees. I didn't know what sex was until sixth grade when a kid brought in like a puberty book to class and I like ran to the bathroom crying because it was so upsetting. Sex to me seemed inherently awful and degrading. And then when I hit puberty and started figuring out what sexuality was, I started figuring out that my particular sexuality was a little bit different, and that upset me even more. So I was like, it's one, the sex is gross in and of itself, but my thing is way too weird, so I'm definitely just gonna not have anything to do with that. I don't remember when I got my hypnosis fetish, but the earliest memory of it I have, I was 4 years old, and I was watching The Jungle Book. And there's the scene where Ka the snake sings "Trust in Me" and hypnotizes Mowgli. And my memory at three or four was thinking that I needed to go to the bathroom, and I thought, this is weird. Why does this keep happening? And eventually I figured out a pattern, which is that that's how I felt every time I saw a scene of mind control or hypnosis on TV.
Trust in me, just in me. Shut your eyes.
What hypnokink practically means is the combination of hypnosis and kink and BDSM. And it means that you can use effects that hypnosis can create to enhance or create the things you do in BDSM. With hypnosis, you can do virtually anything to the limits of your imagination and safety and mutual consent. When I was about 14, I was in middle school, and I just Googled hypnosis stories, and immediately what came up was erotica. And I said, that's not what I was looking for. And after a few minutes, I said, oh, that was what I was looking for. It was an epiphany. Immediately it clicked into place. That was this fascination I've always had was sexual, and suddenly I understood what a fetish might be. And I figured, well, I have it, and this is really fucked up. I actually hit a website that was just like these stories of like people having their will taken away from them. And on the website, there's a disclaimer that says, these stories are purely fantasy. Anyone who really wants to do them should get a life or psychological help. But I read these stories and I thought, but I do want these to happen to me. And I felt upset that it couldn't happen, and I felt upset that I wanted it to happen. So it was essentially wanting to be in the position where really, really awful things would happen to me, but it was just a very upsetting thought. I thought if I wanted bad things, even if I didn't want to really do bad things, and I wanted bad things to be done to me, if I wanted bad things, that made me a bad person. So the sort of only thought I had was at least I could not act on them. I had no idea what acting on it would look like, but it would probably be better to just not act on any sort of quote-unquote normal sexual urges. I had a series of these rules. My rules included no sexual thoughts about a real person, even if it's, say, a celebrity and not a person I know. No masturbating, not that I even knew how. No sex dreams, which sounds like a weird rule to be able to impose, but the rare occasion where it happened, because it would, the dream would start taking on a sexual connotation, I would figure out I was dreaming and I would wake myself up, sort of like lucid dreaming. I felt like if I talked about hypnosis too much in a non-sexual context, people would put two and two together, because for me it was so weird for hypnosis not to be sexual to people. I guess how things got worse was the summer before my senior year, and a friend of mine said something about how, oh, I never get aroused. And I said to the friend, I hate being horny. I would rather be in pain than be horny. And something sort of clicked in my head. And shortly thereafter, I tried punching myself just to distract myself from the way I was feeling. And eventually, I developed another sort of system of rules. I stole my sister's pocket knife, which was a really blunt, pathetic, like, Swiss Army, like, keychain thing. And the rule was, any day that I felt horny at any point during the day, regardless of if it was about hypnosis, I would have to cut myself at least once. The worse that I was that day, the more I would have to cut myself. It was always almost on my breasts. I tried carving the word slut into my right breast. And so my thought was that I know for a fact that sex is bad, but what if one day I change my mind? Well, if I maim myself and I scar myself on a place that, if you saw it, it would mean you're intimate with me, I'll scare people, I'll scare men away. So I cut myself on the breast almost every day for about only 6 months or so. I was on my high school trip to Israel, and I admit to them, girls staying in my room, that I was a cutter. And I told them it was for sexual reasons, but I wouldn't say why. I remember one of them suggested that maybe I see, like, a hypnotherapist or something to help me out. And I freaked out at her, and I was like, that's the worst thing you could have said, but I wouldn't tell her why. They sent me, they said I had to go to the school therapist, and I did. And I was 18 at the time, and I told her, you know, what was going on, but also wouldn't elaborate on why I thought sex and sexual feelings were bad and why I had to do this. And I told her I would go cold turkey, and she said, she made me sign a little thing where she's like, you'll go cold turkey and you'll secretly see a therapist, and then, like, you won't tell your parents. She then called her supervisor, who told her that because she was seeing me through school, I had to tell one of my parents. I went home and I told my sister and my father, who told my mother. And I went cold turkey. It was not so difficult for me. I was a real smart ass about the whole thing. I remember the school therapist being like, wow, you really know so much about this. I was like, unlike other self-harmers, I don't see it as a positive thing. I see it purely as punishment, which is not typical. And I know it's typical addict behavior, but I can stop anytime I want. And I've, like, done research. And so that was senior year. So then it was, well, I'm going off to college and I have all these unresolved issues, so that'll be fun. First of all, what happened in college is I got into steampunk. I went to a steampunk convention, and everyone there was kinky. I remember there was a car ride home where it was me in a car of, like, five other people, and three or four of them were actively into BDSM. I, like, when it was over, I remember, like, stumbling out of the car, like, big-eyed and sort of blown down. But I still didn't, no one talked about, like, hypnosis specifically, even though in retrospect, I know now that one of them is into it. It seems sort of alien, and also particularly that it was consent-based was what they said, and that wasn't how things were in my fantasies. So it didn't seem like there was much there for me. But that's where I learned the false dichotomy, but the dichotomy of kinky and vanilla. And I began wondering, well, maybe I'm not vanilla. So from the steampunk event, I learned about another event that was sort of a mix. It was like steampunk and goth and sci-fi and Ren Faire, and it was supposed to be just this hodgepodge of nerdiness. And it just so happened that the event hired a professional erotic stage hypnotist. I played dumb, essentially. I told the friends I was with, oh, I'm curious about this erotic hypnosis show. And I went, and this guy came out in a freaking tuxedo and, like, goddamn top hat. And he called up volunteers from the audience, and he started hypnotizing them, and then he started doing sexual things with them. Essentially, it mostly involved giving women orgasms and kind of awkwardly ignoring the men who had come up to volunteer. I mean, I was turned on, but I was also sort of having an anxiety attack. And he mentioned, tomorrow morning, all day, I'm going to be selling DVDs of performances in the adult vending area. And I'll totally just, like, hypnotize anyone who comes by. And suddenly I sort of had an opportunity. And I walked over that morning. I woke up early and I went up to him and he said hi. And all of a sudden I went, like, I just want to tell you that you just leave me this fish and I don't know what to do with it, and you're the first person I ever met, and also I don't know what. And he was like, what? So I stopped and I slowed down, and it all sort of came out. I summed up that I was a lifelong hypnosis fetishist who had a lot of problems with it, that fairly recently I had been self-harming, that I had no sexual experience at this point. I had kissed two guys ever, which I mentioned. I sort of unloaded on him. And his response, he had an empty seat next to him behind the table, and he said, well, sit down and let's do something. The thing about BDSM is it takes talking about what you're gonna do before you do it. And in all my time sort of looking at weird porn fantasies on the internet, it had never occurred to me to Google consensual erotic hypnosis or BDSM and hypnosis, because I had no context for that sort of thing. So what I should have done in this situation was ask him, what are you interested in doing? Here's what I'm willing to do. Here's what I'm not willing to do. I didn't know I was supposed to do that, and it did not occur to me to do that. And this guy did not ask me what I was comfortable doing. He hypnotized me, and it was just what we call conversational. He just sort of talked to me, and I went into trance. I remember thinking that I was surprised how much I felt like myself, because I had never experienced it. I also remember that it felt really good, and I hadn't expected it to necessarily feel good as a state in and of itself. He kissed me, even though he knew he was literally the third guy to ever do that. He did give me my first orgasm by verbally telling me to have one. That took like a few tries because I didn't really know what I was supposed to feel, but it worked. Eventually, I said, my friends might be looking for me. And he said, okay, like, you can go. And I got up and I left, and I remembered I was sort of hyperventilating. Why do I feel so upset when I just had a really good time? And I got home and I felt awful. I felt awful that I would never experience anything like that again. And I felt really guilty for wanting to experience something like that again. Also, I just felt upset in a way I couldn't pinpoint. I was still in college at the time, and I called my sister, actually, to tell her... I called her to tell her sort of triumphantly, like, you knew I had this secret, well, here's what it is, and I'm gonna be okay now. And I ended up crying on the phone. Then it was a few months of the worst time I had had since high school. It was like one step forward, two steps back. But at least what had happened was I had started to tell some friends what was going on. The ones who were kinky didn't really know about erotic hypnosis, and they didn't really have the context to tell me that what had happened was fucked up. So I mostly just went around kind of like confused and depressed. So around the fall, there's a convention sort of in the circuit of all these other conventions that's a straight up BDSM like nerd extravaganza. And I had a friend who had gone, and she kept trying to talk me into it and that it would help me, and that also she thought there was hypnosis programming at this event. And I was really hesitant, and she said, I like worked it out, if you want to just show up and volunteer, then you don't need to pay. And I ended up there, and I remember thinking as the event started, well, it's not too late to leave. Like, I didn't think that I was going until after I had already been there. So the hypnosis meetup had been moved, and we converged in the lobby. And I remember seeing this couple, this guy and this woman, and they were saying, oh, we're taking charge of the meetup. And the guy introduced himself. He said his name was Adam, and he started talking about hypnosis and BDSM. And it was like a domino series of epiphanies. He started talking about the history of hypnosis and what it is and what it isn't, and fantasy versus reality, and how you can fit it into a BDSM framework, about how you can talk about what you're going to do before you do, and about how the subject always has a right to say no, and about how consent is as important in hypnosis as anything else, but how you can use it to like play with fantasies of non-consent. And I started being like, oh. And then I thought about what had happened to me in February, and I thought, oh. And I went up to Adam and I said, can I talk to you for a minute? And he said, sure. And he sat down next to me, and I said, first of all, hypnosis is my fetish. And he said, mine too. So we're off to a good start. And I said, have you ever heard of, and I mentioned the guy from February. And he said, oh, that guy. And I went, oh. And he's like, yeah, why? I'm like, ugh. So over the next 3 hours, I told Adam about where I was coming from, what I had been through, what had happened in February, why I liked what I liked. And we just talked and talked and talked and talked. And I started getting interested, and finally, after 3 hours, so it was 3 in the morning, he turned to me and said, well, do you want to try again? And I thought for maybe a moment, and I said yes. And he sat down with me and started just talking, and he said, well, here's what we're gonna do. I'm just gonna like hypnotize you. We won't really even do anything, and then I'll like bring you out of it and we can talk about it. And now I sort of barely remember what happened, not from any sort of like hypnotic amnesia perspective, just because it was so sort of mundane. He just sort of talked. I remember he asked if he could touch me, and I sort of hesitated, and he said, no, I mean on the shoulders or the head, like if you fall over, and like, can I hold your hand he gave me a couple of post-hypnotic suggestions that he checked with me about before he hypnotized me. Things like I was slouching a lot, things that I would sit up, that sort of thing. And when it was over, he said, hey, you know, we don't live that far from each other. Why don't we meet up after the weekend's over? And I said, what are you talking about? It had never occurred to me that I could then continue to do this after the weekend was over. But I thought, why not? And then we eventually went on our first date in Central Park. And we just, like, sat down on a bench and talked, and he hypnotized me on and off. And I remembered thinking that, well, I could never like someone who is doing awful things to me, even if I enjoyed the things. So I'm sure he's a nice guy, but, like, we're not going to be able to be friends or anything. And I came away from the date, and I was like, oh, wow, he's so cool, which sort of surprised me. I had friends that were like, what if you fall in love with him? I was like, that's not going to happen. That probably took like 6 months. Pretty shortly thereafter, we decided to be like officially dominant and submissive. And it's kind of snowballed from there. I started going with him to things, to specific hypnosis things, making friends with other people in the community, being active, demo bottoming classes, blogging. And Adam is very visible in the community. So by being one of his partners, I became really visible. So I suddenly found myself in a position where, for example, it would mean explaining hypnokink to a kinky person who didn't know anything about hypnosis. Or it would mean sort of being a face sometimes where we went. And being able to speak as to hypnosis and consent. Or what fun stuff you can do, or what it's like being a submissive or a subject in the hypnosis scene. It's amazing being able to live the life that I was afraid to live, where I am someone's submissive. I'm a slave to another human being consensually, but we love each other and we talk to each other, and he's also one of my best friends, and his other partners are really good friends of mine. And when whatever you're going through in the context of BDSM, there's always someone who has gone through it already. If I hadn't been in a relationship with Adam, I never would have found my fiancé. Like, I wouldn't have known how to date, how to be a good partner. I just wouldn't have had the context to do it. I would have been super insecure. I would have not known how to communicate as a partner. I would have fucked up way worse than... No one's perfect, but I can say with confidence that without the sort of head start I got before I met my fiancé, I would not have made it work with him. To this day, it is amazing talking to someone else and saying, hey, do you remember that Saturday morning cartoon and having uncomfortable feelings about it when you were six, and having someone be like, yeah, I remember that exact episode. And that's something that's a kick for me every time.
Special thanks to Rachel Jacobs, who produced this episode with us, and to Steph Tan for episode art. This episode was recorded in railroad apartments in Brooklyn, and beneath blankets and bedsheets in the French Quarter, and from a house on a hill in the lovely Montecito Heights neighborhood of Los Angeles, California, by me, Jonathan Hirsch. This project is a proud and founding member of the storytelling collective The Herd. Find out more on our website, ARRVLS.com. And if you like what you've heard, please leave us a review on iTunes. I mentioned at the top that I had a special announcement, so here it is. For almost 2 years, we provided this show to you for free, and it has been a beautiful struggle, a nights and weekends type labor of love for me and everyone who's worked on the show. And I want to keep it that way. Not only that, I would really like to bring you more about the show, more special features, more stories, more interviews. But really, making this thing is basically a full-time job. And to make it possible to continue doing the show, we're trying an experiment that I really hope you'll take part in. The platform that hosts this show, Acast, has partnered with Arrivals to provide a special subscription-based service of our program. And for a couple of bucks a month, literally just $1.99, you'll receive ad-free versions of the show and tons of special features like downloadable, free extended compositions from the Arrivals shows and behind-the-scenes looks into our episodes, extended interviews, and so much more. Really, whatever you want it to be, I will make it. And let me put it this way. If 1 in 10 of you listening to this show right now were to sign up for this, it'd be enough for me to dedicate myself to the show full time, which would mean more stories, more live shows, more everything. So please consider signing up. All you have to do is download the Acast app from the iTunes store, search for Arrivals, and subscribe. There's detailed instructions on our website, which can help you out if you just go to ARRVLS.com and click on the banner at the top of the page, and it will give you all the information that you need. And if you can't afford it or you don't want to, you can just keep listening to this show the way that you have been, and I will keep providing it for you. And as always, thank you so much for listening. My name is Jonathan Hirsch, and until we meet again, may you wind up where you need to be.